The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When I was an infant, my colic was never just colic. My colic was a disaster.
An ill omen, a potential
ruin of England. When I was a boy, refusal to eat my peas was the potential ruin of England. An incorrect sum at mathematics, the potential ruin of England. I have lived my entire life in terror of acting incorrectly because every incorrect action threatened the ruin of England. That terror nearly broke me.
I found places to hide, my farms, my observatory.
My madness. I thought that terror was the price of being royal.
Now, I have met a woman who is never terrified, who does as she pleases.
Breaks rules, courts scandal, commits unthinkable impertinences. And she is the most royal person I've ever known.
Excuse me, Doctor. I have a party to attend. You are dismissed.
Way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Bridgerton with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to Bridgerton on Netflix, so sit back and relax. Let's get ready to spill the tea. Hi, everybody, welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I am sold on this kid that plays King George.
Oh my gosh, isn't he phenomenal?
Sold in it. And, you know, it, of course, it's the sexy thing to say, like, oh, it, like, he does great in, with these fits that he does. And, like, but it was that scene that I was like, okay, I get it.
Wow.
Like, I don't know. It was when he grabbed the razor yep. from the doctor. And the way that he spoke with such ease and mm-hmm. confidence mm-hmm. and believability as he was shaving and yeah. like shaving in live time, right? I looked at that and I just said, this kid gets it.
Yes.
And I was pleasantly surprised by the job that he's doing in this show.
So say we all. So no. say we all. Well, before we get into this amazing episode, because it really was, we're, as we said in the previous episode, we're past now the halfway point. Things are rocking and rolling. We wanted to remind you, of course, that you can find all of the things that we do at maryandblake.com. We actually also have an exclusive Facebook community. Just search Mary and Blake. And of course, we want to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. For making this possible. If you're not yet a member there, you can join for as little as $2 a month. You make a huge difference in making sure our podcasts keep on coming out. And on that note, let's get into the show.
Oh, yeah, sorry, that's me.
Yeah.
I did it again.
It's okay.
But you know what the good news is, Marvin?
What?
I actually played the right music when I was supposed to.
Yes, you did.
I finally did it right. 4 episodes in, baby. I did it right. All right, so this episode was entitled Holding the King. Of course, it was actually not written by Shonda Rhimes. It was written by a guy named Nicholas Nardini. Now, you probably don't know that name.
No.
I did not know that name.
I'm glad I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone. Nicholas Nardini has written for the Shondaland experience, if you will, for a little bit now.
Mm-hmm.
He was a story editor on Inventing Anna, and he wrote 3 episodes of the show Scandal.
Hmm.
So that is that. The director... once again, was Tom Varica, who has directed every episode of this season so far for Queen Charlotte, and he also directed episodes 102 and 103 and 205 and 206 of Bridgerton. So as we have come to know him here at Mary and Blake Media, he is the Shondaland all-star.
Yes.
When Shonda wants something done right, she goes to her boy Tom.
Yes.
She gives Tom a call up on the cell phone and says, "Hey, Tommy.
Hey, I need you.
Got a project.
I need you.
Got a project that I think that you'd be good fit for. Why don't you come over here and take care of it?" So, you know, and Tom and I, we're good friends, too. Yeah, he's a friend of the show. I call him up every once in a while to get the lowdown on Queen Charlotte.
Of course you do. Oh,
my goodness. All right, the cups of tea rating. Marvin, how many cups of tea are you giving
episode? I'm going to give this episode the same amount that I gave the last episode, 4.9. Loved this episode of television. I can watch it again and again. I just think that this adds such a beautiful layer to this series. So I love it.
Yes, yes. Okay, I am going to... I'm going to give a 4.81.
Okay.
A 4.81. I quite enjoyed this episode. In fact, it was the best episode yet of Queen Charlotte, in my opinion.
Mm.
We've kind of gone beyond now that, like, that 4.4, 4.5.
Yeah, we're moving on up for you.
We're moving up. And, well, you know, we'll get into it.
We'll get into it, of course.
All right, go ahead.
So for our GBGs, our good, our bad, and our greats for this episode, my good is just Queen Charlotte just being so smart. You know, she's so observant about the changes that go in inside Buckingham House. Mm-hmm. And for her to feel so bold to, you know, go confront the king when she wants to, go up to the Dowager Princess and to say, "Hey, someone should have given me a little bit of warning here. I noticed these changes." I just love that that is part of her character. She is not someone that... she's not a flake.
Yeah, she's not.
She's on it. And I love that about her.
Totally.
My bad is that this episode and the reactions that King George has from, it seems like his episodes are brought on by incredibly stressful moments, right? Being told your queen is coming. You know, it's your wedding time. Your mom just yelled at you. You know, your wife is pregnant, all these different things that in general would cause, frequently anxiety, excitement as well. Fun fact, anxiety and excitement have the same physical effect in your body. And for any of you who suffer from anxiety or feel like, "Oh, I'm so nervous about XYZ," I'm going to challenge you to frequently try to reframe it in your mind. This has helped me tremendously recently, ever since I learned this. But yeah, it has the same like physical response. Those butterflies, your body kind of feeling like it's overly caffeinated, your mind racing. Those same things happen when you're excited. So if there are things that are happening in your life that you could honestly be very excited about, it's okay to say, "I'm nervous and excited," and keep telling yourself, like, there's so much to be excited about this for. Mm. You know, so when it comes to getting married or, you know, becoming a father, all of these different things, I feel so bad for George because obviously the therapy during that time frame was nothing compared to what it is now. And he doesn't have a little podcaster from Providence, Rhode Island saying, "George, you know, those feelings, you know, when your body feels like, oh my gosh, like my hands are starting to tingle, all this stuff." Now, granted, we obviously don't know exactly what it was that he was suffering from. And nor am I trying to belittle what he was going through, but I'm just saying for friends out there listening, this has helped me. It hasn't cured me by any means. I am a severely anxious person, but this has helped me a lot. But in his anxious moments, in his episodes that he was having, my heart broke for him because no one was there to like help, stop the fall in a way that we now know might have really helped him. Because sure. These, you know, obviously we're meant to believe that he was having these outbreaks, these episodes, these moments where his illness was really hard for him at many times in his life because they refer to it. But in this episode, it shows when it's these really momentous moments in his life. And I feel so badly that no one was putting the pieces together like, "Oh, wow, he has one of his fits," as they call it in the show. He has one of his fits every single time we drop a bomb on him about something. He does pretty well out in the farm. He does pretty well with XYZ. But every time his mom yells at him then he's sick. Well, maybe the mom should be doing something things a little differently. Like, I just, my heart breaks for him as someone who myself, as I said, I've, you know, both Blake and I have had mental illness issues. And so, you know, whether you yourself have gone through any kind of mental illness, or if you had someone in your life who struggles with it, you know, it's hard. It's hard to watch. So sure. Those were my bads. I just felt so bad for him because I couldn't hug him through my TV.
Aww.
And my great is when he tells her, you know, we are a team.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to thank me. We are a team. Oh, I'm done. I love it. Love it. Love it.
All right. For me, the good is the doctor, who is played by a guy named, oddly enough, Guy Henry.
A guy named Guy.
Yeah. So
convenient.
I want you to know, Marvin, that Guy Henry has starred in one of your favorite franchises ever.
I thought he looked familiar.
He totally did look familiar. I'm sitting there going, where the hell do I know this guy from?
How do I know him? He still feels shady.
He plays Pius Thickness in Harry Potter.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
Oh, sorry, hold on. I gotta do play my sound again.
You're a wizard, Harry.
There we go.
In my Deathly Hallows, man. Turned
down. Yeah, in the Deathly Hallows. He's Pius Thickness.
Oh my gosh. And from the Ministry of Magic.
Yep, that's him.
That is totally fitting. And I feel like this guy must be like, why am I always cast as this like sniveling, creepy guy?
Because your name is Guy. That's why.
Thank your parents, buddy.
So, I thought that was an interesting little tidbit.
Agreed.
From the Harry Potter franchise.
Love it. But I love that.
Even though there is that cool little tidbit there, that little nugget, I thought that he was fantastic in this episode when he's calling the king boy and he's giving him a whack, you know, and he plays the character with just enough sensitivity where you're like, hey, you know, this guy's all right. He's all right. And then all of a sudden,
I feel like he got that script for auditioning for the role and was like, I got this.
I was Pius Thickness.
You need me to be like menacingly bad.
Yeah.
But in a, I don't know, he kind of reminds me of Ichabod Crane from you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like he's not menacing because of his body. He's not this brute. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. Either way, it is what it is. So, that was my bad.
Is that still working?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
you got me all messed
up.
Sorry,
I was showing you something off screen.
I know, you got me all messed
up. So you're bad.
Yes, so that's my bad. I liked the character that he played. I liked the everything that he did. I just thought it was, he was just enough good where you thought that he was an okay kind of guy. And then it was just enough bad where you're like, this guy freaks me out a little bit. Yeah. Freaks me out a little bit.
Freaks me out a lot. And not a little.
I can't tell if he's truly bad or if he's truly good or if he's just like, is it really torture?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We'll get into that too. All right. But my great.
Do you want to do that?
Well, no, but
on and on and on and on.
Well, no, but again, nope. Let's just we'll talk about it and
okay.
we'll figure it out.
All right.
My great though, it has to go to Tom Verica. What Tom Verica did in this episode was really cool. And it's a Mary and Blake media commandment. I love things that are flashy. All right. I love flashy storytelling. I love flashy camera work. I love flashy lighting. You can call me a little basic.
You're basic.
In my tastes.
Okay.
It's probably the J.J. Abrams in me a little bit, where I like the Flash.
Okay. Not the superhero, but yeah.
Yeah, no. Well, the Flash is okay. He's a little boring.
He is
a little boring, but I'm looking forward to the new movie.
Good for you.
You're coming with me for Father's Day. It's going to happen.
Oh.
Great. I tried to get her to go see the new Spider-Man today. She wouldn't do it.
Oh, I said I wanted a podcast.
That's
instead.
True. So I'm
glad I made this choice.
It was a good choice. Anyway,
thank you.
I just I the way that he, Tom Verica, shot this episode was spectacular. And you could probably go hand in hand now with the director of photography for the lighting in this episode. It was bright when the king was with Charlotte. It was dark and damp and dreary when he was alone. But Tom Verica framed it with his camera work with all of these like canted angles where wherever the king was when he was with the doctor or when he was by himself, it's these offset angles.
Which looked great to me because I usually watch the show when I'm laying down on the couch and I was like, oh.
So it made sense.
Meant for Mary. Lay down viewing.
It was just like these canted angles that, you know, when you're watching it, you may not recognize it right then and there, but your brain does. Mm-hmm. And your brain is sending signals to you like, whoop, something is off.
Something's off. Watch out.
I don't know what it is. Something is off.
Yeah.
And Verica chose these really intense close-ups of the king. And he made the king envelop the frame whenever he was on screen. Mm-hmm. But then there were points when the king was very, very small on screen. And those are very purposeful points, right? It's showing you that the focus is on him, yet he's still small in his demeanor.
You know, like what he said, you know, I love the universe because I'm just this small thing.
Right. So that is my good, that is my bad, and that is my great.
Love it.
That is my great. So that is that. What do you want to do? You want to talk
about the music?
Yes, the music. If you could vamp for me for one moment.
All right. So, of course, in like they do in Bridgerton, we find cover songs, and there was one episode where we didn't get to have one, but over the past couple of the past two, this one included, we have gotten it, and we got another song by the Queen herself, Queen Bee, Beyoncé. And it is Deja Vu.
I got it right now. Here you go. Ready?
All right. This is the cover. Yes. So right here. Love it because it's just got this nice pulsation. And for people who aren't like super familiar with the song, you might be feeling just this, it's got a great steady beat. This is of course when they're in the dance at the Lady Danbury's ball. No. Mm-hmm. Is it?
What?
No, this was the wedding dance. So yes. What I loved about this is I complained in the wedding scene that they weren't playing cover music.
Right.
I was like, what is this? It's just like generalized music box music. Bridgerton, I'm here for the covers. I'm here for the Vitamin C string quartet, you know, classical kind of styled covers. So I love that we had that basic music then so that this could now be playing over it. And, of course, it's named Deja Vu. And this is playing while we are reliving moment after moment of that initial time frame. You know, the wedding dancing and getting back to Buckingham House and yelling at each other and all this kind of stuff and George's pensive moments. So, I mean, it's pretty on the nose what it is because it's called Deja Vu.
Well,
so
yeah,
it's
sure.
It's allowing us as the viewers that cute little like, all right, you want to see things from the other perspective? You ready to go down a trip down memory lane now that you have this insight about what's been going on with George? Well, let's bring it on back. Let's rewind the tape. Instead of that awkward rewind sound or using Satisfied. Mm. You know, this is kind of like Satisfied, you know, when they rewind in Hamilton, which also, as I said, loves to take place at the same time. Mm-hmm. So in Beyoncé's song, Deja Vu is about the ups and downs of a romantic relationship. She talks about constantly reliving the same problems and scenarios in her relationship despite her best efforts to break free. This feeling of deja vu is a common theme in relationships, especially ones that are strained and difficult. And so it's amazing to me, not only that we as the viewers get to relive the same footage, and to us it's deja vu. Of course, this is happening again.
Yeah.
But how difficult it must be for George that no matter what strides he tries to do, no matter what methodology he tries to use to heal himself, and the amount of doctors he does and everything, he still keeps having these episodes and he can't stop it.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting.
Love it.
Good stuff. I've been a big fan of the Queen Bee in this series so far.
So has the musical choice person because it's many, many pieces by her.
I would still say that the Alicia Keys song is probably still my
phenomenal.
Favorite. But this is a cool choice, and especially when they start playing this as they're dancing and everything, it's just interesting. I liked the feeling that I got from it. Mm-hmm. But Marvin, I as we just got done saying, I love flashy things, but I want to know your take on all of this, and that is, how do you feel about stopping the story dead in its tracks?
Yeah.
And I don't want to say killing the momentum, because, you know, by the end of the episode, we get a little bit of forward motion.
Okay.
But, I mean, it stops it dead in its tracks to mm-hmm. retread everything. Obviously, from George's perspective.
Yes.
And I guess if
it's a choice.
If I were to argue against it, mm-hmm. I would say, buddy, you got 6 episodes. What are we doing going back and showing a whole new perspective on the same events? It feels like we're spinning wheels to just spin wheels.
Love that. Love that for you.
Yeah.
You ready?
And I'm not saying
I believe
it.
What is the name of this show?
It's Queen Charlotte.
It's Queen Charlotte.
Yes.
So up until this point, Queen Charlotte has had no idea about why her husband's been treating her this way, why she's living somewhere different, why he's nice to her one moment and then gone and cold another moment. And then at the end of the previous episode, we get this, you know, realization for her,
mm-hmm.
you know, finding him, you know, what's going on with my husband? What is this? So we got to learn with her in real time, but then we also got the inside scoop. And for people like me who had a hard time connecting with George, I loved George when he stopped her from climbing up the wisteria. Mm-hmm. I was there for it.
Sure.
I'm not a troll, you know, all that. I was love. But then when he got all wishy-washy and went back and forth, I did not trust him. I was not a fan of him. I didn't like how he was treating Charlotte. And kind of, I was able to disassociate the knowledge that I had of George, so I could just kind of sit there. And I remember asking you, and I might have said this in the first episode, like, maybe they're not romantic partners. Mm. Maybe she actually has these 15 babies with somebody else. You know, yes. Like, is George interested in women?
We call that the column choice. Having babies with somebody.
Yeah, yes, yes.
sorry, that's...
Yeah, I need the sound effects. Yes.
There you go.
So I just, you know, I was able to kind of like forget slightly about what I already knew about King George. And so in that forgetting a bit and kind of separating from that, because the show started off, you know, this is fiction. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to live here for it. I was mad at him and I was frustrated. So I love that this episode allowed me to peel back the layers and to really see what's been going on, because it melted my cold heart.
Mm.
Remember when I was watching episode 1 and I was like, I don't like him.
Yeah.
I said that to you because you were like, oh, what do you think? And I was like, I don't like him. I don't like him, and I'm supposed to love him, and I'm supposed to love this romantic story. And I personally greatly liked when this episode came, because instead, even while I didn't like him, I was still like Team Charlotte. I was watching the episodes, loved it, loved the flashbacks and everything. Mm-hmm. So I still loved the show. But I, too, struggled with getting attached to this man, just like Charlotte did.
Yeah, sure. So here's the thing with that. I would say I was bought in from last episode, right? I was bought in to the premise. I was bought into what was happening. The Venus thing just, it just blew my doors off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I think, well, I mean, I have a feeling I know why. And I always kind of liken it back to... Well, you know what? I will reference another show.
Okay.
And that is The Leftovers. When Kevin, at the end of The Leftovers, reads the unfinished love poem.
Yes.
And he always talks about how the guy was afraid to let his wife see him cry, mm-hmm. and let his to let her know that he was afraid and everything. And
yeah.
That still brings me to tears every time I watch it. And that's what it reminded me of when I was watching the Venus scene.
Mm.
And the Leftovers scene happened at a very critical moment in our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it has stayed with me. And there are certain things that come back, and there are certain things that make me feel that way. where, but in a good way, right? And in this particular case, it reminded me of how vulnerable love is and how vulnerable people are, mm-hmm. and what love can do, and how you rely on the person that is in your life to guide you through emotional trauma and physical trauma, mm-hmm. and support and, you know, all of the things. And I feel like I've had my Venus moment, right, with you. And I feel like I've had those times with you where my whole world is like banana land, and you're like, all right, Blake, come on, we'll take care of you, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that's why I felt so strongly about it, because I've been there, and I felt alone and just wild. Anyway, we're not talking about that episode. What I'm saying is I was bought in for that moment. And no matter what the king did, even if the actions were not redefined by this episode, I would still be bought in on the king.
Yes.
Because you could argue that he's just not functioning. Like his mind is not functioning on the right level.
Yes.
Right? So there would be moments of carelessness, and there would be moments of being aloof, right? And then there are moments of love and tenderness, mm-hmm. right? Just because he's on friggin' Mars, right? But having this new context certainly helps. Mm-hmm. I would also argue, I think that before this episode, we just didn't know anything really about the king. And that was probably by design.
Yeah.
But Mary, can you tell me one thing you knew about the king prior to this episode, other than he liked to have sex?
That his mom caused him a lot of stress. He wasn't on good terms with her. That he liked astronomy and gardening.
Fair.
That seemed to treat his people pretty nicely. Not like overly nicely, but he's not mean to other people. Mm-hmm. He seems witty and playful.
Sure. Okay.
Fair.
Okay. Yeah. No, you said that's good. All right. That's good. And you know what? That's probably a testament to the writing that you can at least name at least those things. Mm-hmm. Without having a contextual episode, right?
Yes,
until this one. So, you know, I tried to take the you know, be the devil's advocate and say that we're stopping the story halfway through, and we're just bringing it to a halt for this episode. But I will say again, I'm flashy, and I like that thing. I like that kind of storytelling. Like, I'm a Christopher Nolan fanboy. Like, let's play with the timeline, and let's play with perspective, and let's do all those things.
There's no timeline difference, by the way, in this episode.
What do you mean?
It doesn't go back and forth.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yep. Fair enough.
And I have an idea about that.
Okay. What do you mean?
Because, like, he's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs in the future. He doesn't know what's up or down.
Oh, I like that.
So his plot line is very, very minimal. You know what I mean? He's confused. Sure. And from what we got to see from Bridgerton season 2, I don't know. I just don't think that it would be tracking. It would be like what he drew on the wall. You know what I mean?
So let's talk about the Dr. Monroe of it all.
Okay.
Our pious thickness.
Okay.
And the treatment that George willingly takes.
Yes.
Is it torture?
I think so.
How come?
It's a lot of pain. I mean, can people like torture? Okay, so just because he signed up for it, and just because he said, yes, please, and I'll do this, can he still be tortured? And I think yes. I think there's some people who do like to be tortured. You know, like those S&M people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they like that.
Sure.
So I think you can be tortured, and but still have signed up
yum.
For it. That's what I'm saying. Okay. I read 50 Shades of Grey. So I'm not saying that you can't be tortured if you signed up for it. But can it be painful? Can it create like emotional, mental issues in and of itself? Yes. Would I want to do this? No. No, thank you. And I think, you know, when George says stop, they do stop.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, like, what is torture? Is torture just like really hurting somebody, or is torture truly like doing it when they say no?
Yeah. I think that's a great question, because implicit in torture is that it is
unwanted.
Unwanted.
And unasked for. Yeah.
Right.
So, but then S&M confuses me, I guess.
So,
like, I just think about ticklish torture, you know? Like, I hate being tickled because I'm so ticklish. Oh, and it feels like torture to me.
My favorite thing to do.
And sometimes I tell you
feet.
To stop tickling
it's
me.
It's the best. Tickling yeah. your feet.
And I will say, this is torture, stop, and I'll be kicking him. So that is torture to me.
Sure.
Okay, but he said yes to this and signed up for it. And once he said no, hardcore, and dismissed the doctor stopped. So I don't know. I guess torture confuses me because of what I know.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Lumos is just wrecking everything in our studio. It's okay. She's the real star here.
She is.
What she wants, what she says goes, okay? A lot of meowing here. Lots of
meowing.
She wants
me to look for Peter Pettigrew on my Marauders map. That's what she just knocked over. Okay. But those very, very primitive methods of medical assistance, which, by the way, like...
The leeching and...
Terrible things were happening to people who suffered from mental illnesses.
Sure.
Even within, like, the past 50 years.
Yeah, man.
And so it's hard to watch this kind of stuff. And yet... I don't know. I'm not saying that it's not hard to watch, but it just makes me sad that, you know, we watch this and we're sad about it. But like in the 70s, tons of that weird, terrible stuff was still happening.
Sure.
In different ways.
Yep.
But still torturing people.
Yeah.
And these people couldn't say no. And I think that that's the other thing. If someone is mentally not fit, then they can't give consent.
Yeah, because they just aren't informed enough.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I just think it's an interesting conversation to have. I'm not falling on either side necessarily.
What I'm feeling, you know, because we talked about rape and consent with Bridgerton season one.
Sure.
And what I appreciate in this episode of having one's body be... used in these different ways, not sexually, but like her in different ways, is that George had asked for it and continued to. And once he said stop, it did stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I do hate this doctor. And I think that his methodology was disgusting and terrible. And he seemed to take pleasure out of it. But I will say that he did stop.
Sure.
And then
he abided by the orders.
Yes. And then George goes back for it.
Yeah. And I think we get into some great writing tools here where it's, you know, George takes the initiative for his own treatment. And after, you know, a pretty convincing situation from Dr. Monroe, when he's just like, listen, we just need to talk to George. Just need to talk to him.
Oh my God. I was so excited
right,
when that
I
happened.
Know.
And he was able to really help him focus.
Yeah,
you know,
like
you're the king.
That.
You have armies to command. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, George is there. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. And again, a little bit of flashy filmmaking. What we're getting is.
I feel like the Michael Phelps talk therapy commercial was playing in the background. What is the one that he speaks for?
I can't remember.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, talk therapy.
a little bit of flashy filmmaking here too, when we are in George's perspective and Dr. Monroe is trying to say to him, "You command armies." And it's coming from George's eyes, and yes, it's all like out of focus and like movement and everything. But there again, there's some writing tools here that happen. George is in his state. He goes to get this treatment. And just when he thinks that he is free and he's okay to do the things that he needs to do, the pregnancy talk, either purpose or not on purpose from Dr. Monroe, I'm not quite sure, and I want to have that conversation. That's what sets him back.
Yep.
And puts him back in the same exact position at the end of our episode, which is putting him back in stasis, right? And when you're in stasis and out of stasis, that is what you're trying to accomplish as a writer or as a director, right? If your characters are staying still and everything is wee yay, like, then you're not watching. What you're watching is just kind of crap. You have to see that change. You have to see that movement. So I like that the show has done this. It's put him back into the hands of Dr. Monroe, which leads me to my next question, Mary. Okay. Did Dr. Monroe tell George about the pregnancy on purpose, knowing that it would, I don't want to say send him, you know, astray, but knowing that it's going to have an
cause
effect.
Cause him ill. It's difficult. Like, I don't think he like premeditated it, you know, cause it's not like he's like, "Ooh, I'm going to make my concoction tonight because this is the time when George comes down for his post-coital milk that he, like, what was George going to do in the kitchen?
I don't know.
I loved it how
he's just going to go make a sandwich, have a little Sammy.
Anthony doesn't even know how to warm milk, okay? And yet the King of England, he can go down and make a sandwich. He could probably make a really good club sandwich. Oh my gosh, fry up some bacon. Anyway, so I don't think the doctor was in the kitchen making what looked like pea soup. We know it's not pea soup, but making some kind of concoction for the queen at 2 a.m. thinking maybe the king will stroll around here. Honestly, I kind of liked that the doctor was making his little stuff at that point, because then he won't be seen by the kitchen staff. He won't be bumping into the king. It'll be under the radar. So to me, I'm like, the doctor was kind of doing the right thing. Now, in that split second, though, when he does see the king and the king's like, "Oh, what's up, man? Just partied, just had sex. Life is great. Me and my wife are amazing. Like, life is just the best since I left you." It's difficult for me to say, because the king asks him, "What the hell are you doing here? I fired you. You're not even supposed to be here." And then the doctor has to say, "The queen asked me to stay," because no one else can top the king. You know, when the king fires you, that's it.
Then Reynolds, you're gone.
Reynolds can't say, "Please stay to give me my hair gel."
You got like, your pink slip. You're gone.
You're done. Unless it's the queen.
By the way, Reynolds does not use hair gel.
Moose. Okay.
Get it straight.
So, because you know the doctor whips that up.
Tresemme only. Okay. No. Tresemme only for Reynolds. So, that's the end.
So to me, he had to say, "Yes, the queen hired me to make her some stuff." And he could have either said, "The queen hired me to make some stuff, but I think that you should probably have this conversation with her first." But it's the king. I think he had to say that. Now, did he get pleasure out of it? Did he think like, "Oh my God"? Like, did he go back to his room? Or when the king went upstairs, was he stirring his pot being like, "Oh, let's get it happen"? But like, also from the medical sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Oh, I notice every time he has like a big event or something catches him off guard, he has an episode like, "Ooh, like, I didn't even mean to do that, but this is like science," you know?
Right,
so I think
that
he definitely got excited out of it, that he got something out of it. But do I think that he said that with malintent? No, I honestly think he had to tell him the queen hired me. And then when he would have said, "Well, why did the queen hire you?" It's the king. You want to be beheaded and say, "I don't know, go ask her"? You're going to lie to the king? You're going to tell him you should probably ask her? No, you do what the king says.
Sure, sure.
You say, because she's pregnant. Congratulations.
Will there be
an after effect, a domino effect? Probably. But what was my other option? Death?
Right, yeah.
This guy's mad that I'm in his kitchen at 2 a.m.
We're going to have to figure this out.
Yeah. Like, he went back to his cronies and was like, "Guys, this is either going to be really good really bad. Because he knows that easily George can go up and say, Charlotte, honey, I know you really want that pea soup all over your belly. I don't know what you're going to do with it. Drink it, eat it, put it somewhere. I don't even know, okay? But let's get you a different doc. Right? He could have easily done that. And now Doc's out of a job. Mm. But not dead. At least not dead. Okay?
And this is why the character works for me, I think. Because there's enough there that I look at it and I can make a case for both sides. Right? Okay. I can make a case for like him being a bad news dude or a guy that just appreciates the science and like actually wants to do the thing.
Now, are you meaning to tell me there's no other medical doctors at all inside this castle? And that that's the one thing that I think is weird, that did he somehow let it slip to Brimsley or the queen? Like, how did the queen find him? He was in the basement. He's the shady doctor.
Yeah, see, that's
the thing that I'm like, how did the queen get his number or his email address? You know,
yeah.
Like, I think that he was like, oh, and if the queen ever needs me, I'm the king's doctor. Like, did they bump into each other one day? That's where I feel like he did a little shady. Because I feel like there's plenty of medical staff. Queen Charlotte says that there's plenty of people. Why'd you have to meet in the basement?
Sure. And it's obviously been shown that George has been seeing a number of different doctors.
Yes.
At the beginning of the episode.
So she said, Brimsley, I need a doctor, please. I don't think Brimsley would go down to the basement to find the shady guy.
Right.
I think shady guy like left
found
his business
her.
Card.
Yeah.
Dear Queen Charlotte, if you ever need a solve.
Do you want me as your doctor? Check yes or check no.
Do you need me as a doctor or would you like some mousse? And she was like, you know, Brimsley's hair does have volume. Maybe she...
I kind of need
that
recipe.
That's what it is. She first went to him for hair stuff.
Oh, to Reynolds, not Brimsley.
She first went to the doc. She went to Reynolds and said, Reynolds, how do you get your hair so bouffant? And he said, oh, it's this guy in the basement. She was like, give me his number, man, because I've got some wigs that need holding.
Yeah, his name is Dr. Tresemme. He's
like,
really nice.
There would have been a doctor and like a midwife. Like there would have been people who specialized in female needs, especially for the woman who is caring for an heir. I feel like she would have been inspected monthly by someone that this is what they do.
Yeah, but
so somehow but the shady doctor gave him her
I don't think it's
her
public
his
knowledge
number.
Yet that she is pregnant.
No, but that's what I'm saying is that you're the queen. I feel like you'd have some kind of a doctor checking on you once a month.
I see. All right.
Being like, oh, what are you eating? How are you doing?
Gotcha.
What's your cervical mucus like nowadays? Like, they were just.
What's your cervical mucus
like? It's a thing,
Blake.
It's a thing. It changes.
Yeah. I saw the mucus plug, by the way.
No, not just the mucus plug at birth. I'm saying.
But whatevs. I saw one.
Yeah. We know. People don't need to know that.
It was wild.
I know, Blake. Thank you. For those of you who haven't had the beauty of all of this stuff, I'm sorry. Needless to say,
the miracle of birth.
Yes. I feel like there would have been a team that would have done this. And I think the doctor, we don't get to see the doctor do any shady stuff, but he somehow left his business card on her nightstand.
Or in her locker.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you need mousse or anything
else? Do you think he folded up in that square?
I'm your husband's number one doctor. I'm the guy in the basement. Come find me.
Oh, man.
So that's the part that I find shady. Did he get joy out of telling the king? Yes.
Yeah.
Is he kind of excited to see what happens? Yes. But did he plan for that to happen in that way? I don't think
Remind
so.
Me, we didn't see Charlotte reach out to the doctor.
No.
Right? So, yeah, like
we see her touch her belly, so we know that she's like, oh,
again, the
like
universal
that.
Sign for pregnancy in television.
Not your burrito gas.
Definitely didn't go to Chipotle that day. So I wonder, like, is there more stuff afoot here? Is the game afoot, if you will?
We're going to find out in the next episode.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would imagine so. We only got two episodes left.
Yeah.
But it just feels...
I don't want the doctor to be like a big player anymore, okay? I had enough of you.
I got a feeling he's going to be a big player. I think there's going to be more. And I think that George is going to start subjecting himself to even more torturous things.
Okay.
Because what I really loved about this episode too was that all he wanted to do was just be near Charlotte.
Yes.
And like when
and she made him better.
Right. And when he steals the dog, it wasn't an FU like she thought it was.
Yes.
It was actually really a truly a sign of love, and we're going to be out of our cage together and the whole thing. Like.
And then she called it a deformed bunny and he loved that.
Right. Like he thought that was great. I love stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Like this kind, like again, I understand why. And I understand how some people don't like this episode. I get, okay. Like, I get it. Because, again, we're stopping everything dead in its tracks just to go over the same crap again.
But, deja vu.
But I think, again, you have to buy into the relationship between the two of them. If you buy into the relationship between the two of them, you're going to buy this episode. If you don't buy it, then you won't buy the episode.
Yes.
Because... A natural, again, implicit.
If you don't buy it.
Yeah, implicit in the buying it is that you care about the characters.
Yes.
Right? Because you don't care about a relationship unless you care about the characters.
I mean, hello, we're watching Bridgerton shows. We care. We care deeply.
So I will say that I think the show benefits from the fact that
we are all Violet Bridgertons at heart, okay? If we're watching this show, we are romantics here for the love.
Yes.
You can't sit through Bridgerton if you are not here for the love in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Sorry.
Especially because there was little to no sex in season two. So if that's why you are here, no, we're here because we're all Violet Bridgertons at heart.
Do you feel bad for the king when he has to go back to the doctor? Because I guess what another question here is the treatment feels like it's working. It feels like it puts George in a position where he is able to go do the things that he is supposed to do.
I think the treatment works because he doesn't have anything thrust upon him that would cause massive upheaval. Like, okay, if you're just hanging out with the doctor and gardening, your mom can't come and yell at you. Your wife isn't like, you know, doing life-changing things. He had a lot of life-changing things. This is why they say you shouldn't have too many life-changing events in the same year. You shouldn't move the same year you have a baby and get married and you know, people pass. Like, it's just difficult. It adds a lot of difficulty when you had those elements. As many of listeners probably know who've layered things. So I'm just saying he had a lot of big life changes.
Don't make that drastic choice to cut your hair.
If he is hiding, fun fact, the actor who was cast as George, he had just like shaved his head prior to the reading for this and the casting.
Oh, really?
So he was like so nervous that they weren't going to pick him because they're not going to pick like a bald George.
Right.
So that's why his hair is kind of like awkward chia pet growing in, because it is. They didn't have time to be like, okay, can you have long hair that's in style a little bit more? Like, what you see is what you get. He probably put salve on that every night.
You know, it kind of actually reminds me, remember the show The Tudors with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers?
Yeah.
When he played the younger King Henry VIII, he had that same haircut.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of.
I like that.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting.
So could one argue that his treatments with the doctor worked? Maybe. But I think
was working.
Yeah, or was he going to be fine anyway? He could have just been gardening that whole time. Like, maybe the fresh air was doing him good, and going out and gardening and using his physical exertion. And then when he started to hang out with Charlotte and things were going really well, like, it wasn't stressful. He was full of love. He was feeling all these good things. And it wasn't until these game-changing events happened for him that he would blow up. So I honestly don't know if the treatment was working. He might just need a slower pace of life. And I wish that he could have just been a farmer.
I also want to call out as well the editing in this episode. This would be my secondary great. The editing in this episode was spectacular. There was a terrific pace to the story. There was a terrific back and forth. And this, in my opinion, was truly exemplified when Charlotte was going about her days when she was alone and resenting the king. And at the same time, they're intercutting back and forth.
Oh my gosh, when he's like hiding in the little window watching her play chess.
And she smashes it over. But there's also, it's intercut or interwoven with the scenes of him being, you know, in quotes, tortured, right?
Yeah.
Where she's eating her breakfast.
Him having his treatment.
Right. He's getting his face stuck in ice cold water and screaming and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then going back to that shot again and like that repetition and the gruel and
all. A lot of people do that now for fun. Not for fun, because it helps like supposedly regulate their
their body?
Nervous system.
Oh, well, yeah, actually, I just watched a thing.
It's like a big thing. It's like very popular right now.
Who did I watch that? Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for now the Jets. Freaking Jets. Jets suck. Was the quarterback for the Packers. He would have training sessions. Mm-hmm. And after the training session, he would go into an ice bath.
Yeah.
And he actually got that, to my knowledge, from his ex-girlfriend, Danica Patrick, who was the F1 racer.
Okay.
And she was like the first Formula F1 racer or something, which was really cool.
I know like a few people who do this now. They like take ice baths in their backyard.
It's wild. No thanks.
I'm more just like turned the shower down to medium cold at the end of my shower because I'm telling myself that I'm getting the same effects, that this will help my anxiety. This will help me just a little bit. I'm like Will Ferrell and Elf when I do it, where I'm standing and I'm just spraying myself just a little bit. Go away, anxiety.
Well, I remember when I had my serious panic attacks when things were not well. I remember my therapist saying, go get in a cold shower.
Yes.
Or go.
It works.
It shocks your body, man. I will say that. And it helps. It absolutely helps.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the same thing for George at that moment, but it certainly helped.
Maybe they should have put his whole body in and kept his head out. That's how all the people do it.
That's true. I don't know. Yeah, just it's an interesting thing.
But the leeches.
Yeah, no.
And the different treatments that the Dowager Princess talks about with the other doctors. I mean, they did some really wild, terrifying stuff.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the Dowager Princess.
Okay.
Are you buying her? Are you buying her choices and what she has done to George and how she's acting with George about all of this?
Am I buying it? What does that mean?
Well, are you buying it? Like, do you believe her that she loves George and she's trying to do the right thing and she is desperate and she is like, you know, like, so you're buying it.
I am. Okay. I think that any parent who has had a child who has gone through lifelong serious illnesses, or maybe not lifelong, but for a long period of time, especially when they're hit with frustration and things that aren't working, they have intense stress upon them that they will want to try lots of different things. And mind you, like we see these methods as barbaric, but this is what they had back then.
Right.
So we may see it now as like change their diet, you know, maybe try a couple of different medicines, you know, like different things now that might be a little bit more experimental or not fully done with clinical trials. But if you're like, I've tried everything, I'm willing to try anything else. And I think that those kind of parents, their patience is really thin, that they don't get a lot of sleep. Their self-care oftentimes takes a big hit. You know, my older sister has severe disabilities, and like it completely changed the trajectory of my parents' lives.
Sure,
And you know, caring for someone who full-time needed assistance, and then on top of that, he's the king.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can be in the farm countryside working on these things. Okay, George is having a bad day. You know, what we have found is that if he's outside and we stay calm, it works for him. No, he's got all these pressures of the kingdom on top of him.
Sure.
So he doesn't get a timeout. And for the time being, it's Princess Augusta, who we haven't seen her king, so he's dead. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you know, so she's doing this all alone. She doesn't have a husband.
Yeah, I like how she commanded the room when she could see that he was
starting. Withdraw.
Yeah, and she's like, and you can understand how some people know something is up, but don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Like that scene right there explains that.
Yeah.
So earlier in the season when Charlotte is saying, what about the king? Like, who is this guy? Like, what's his deal? You can at least get into the idea, or you can at least accept the idea that they're not necessarily being cagey for the sake of being cagey. They're being cagey because ultimately they just don't necessarily know. And that doesn't mean they're not withholding the information. They're not withholding the fact that there is some questionable stuff happening, but there is at least some let's put it, how do I want to say this? Plausible deniability. We'll put it that way. Yeah. And for those of you who are watching right now, Mary has stepped out of the studio, so you're stuck with me for right now. And then for those of you who are listening later on in the future, well, you know what? You didn't know a thing. You're just like, wow, Blake's talking a lot. Why is he talking so much? So yeah, I think one of the things that I really like too about all of this, about the ending of the episode, is that Charlotte is an interesting character, as in a way that she is, as George has noted, she is in fact fearless, right? She does what she wants to do. She talks to who she wants to talk to. She makes the choices that she does. And that seems to be somewhat of a salve for George. And I think that there's this, you know, collision of what is right for George. Is it the relationship that he shares with Charlotte? Or is it, or is it the treatment that he is receiving from the doctor, which in my estimation seems to be a little bit motivated from his mother. I was just saying, Mary's now back into the studio, and I was just saying, Mary, there seems to be a question about what is right for George. Is it the relationship that he shares with Charlotte, or is it the treatment that he's receiving from the doctor?
Charlotte! Will it fix him? No.
Right.
Can George be fixed? Probably no.
Sure.
Not at this day and age. Probably not being the king. Because at least the way that this show is portraying it, he doesn't do well anytime there's like a big thing. And I'm sorry, but you're the king and there's about to be a revolution in America.
Yeah. I guess one of my bads of this episode is that there isn't much of a choice between the doctor and the queen.
And like...
It's obviously...
To me, this even puts more pressure on making an heir. Because what if you get an heir that is capable in the next... I don't know what time you can become an heir. 17, 15?
Sure, yeah.
But like, what if we can produce an heir who is...
Mentally stable.
Capable of doing this.
Yeah.
And wants to do it. And he says, Dad, you've done. You're done. I got this, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
And if he feels like he can't accomplish much, you know,
because... Yeah, but would they even allow that, right?
I don't know.
Would they even allow someone...
I mean, he's the king. You can do whatever they want in England. They, like, changed everything.
No, what I'm saying is, would the royal family, let's just say...
Yeah. Well, by then, Augusta might be dead. Mommy can't tell you what to do anymore.
Good point. Oh, Charlotte with the line, has your highness ever tried cutting mutton with a dull knife?
Oof.
Oh, love that. Love that line. I thought that was great.
I mean, you know, I actually don't want any mutton. So if I can't cut it, good.
Is Princess Augusta making the right choice by allowing Charlotte to discover the... as she says, the rough edges of the king's nature in due time? Or should she have had that conversation with Charlotte?
She's not close to Charlotte. She doesn't care. She doesn't even know if they would hang out. She probably knew they were going to have a different house. She probably gave her son that idea. Oh, why don't you just give her own palace? Girls love palaces. She'd love that. She'll have all these servants. We'll give her new clothes every day. She can change 3 times a day. Isn't that amazing?
Is it a little lazy to write in the way that they did that, George doesn't want to be around Queen Charlotte because he doesn't feel like he's, in quotes, normal enough for her.
What do you mean? Like, when did he write? I don't understand.
Well, he was always saying, well, I can't subject her to me. Like, I'm dangerous and I'm not normal. Like, and so he chooses to stay away from her.
Well, I don't think he recollects everything that happens during his fits. And I don't know if he's ever hurt himself or hurt others. Mm-hmm. By them removing anything that could be a weapon leads me to believe that maybe he has done some damage. in the past.
That makes sense, right? Because why would he say that?
Yeah, like maybe otherwise. He is so upset and he accidentally whacks somebody or, yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Maybe not like getting a knife to somebody, but accidentally. Yeah, so I think that maybe he has accidentally hurt someone and he learned about it. He said, oh man, I don't want that to happen. Or just to scare her. Scaring is hurt enough as it is.
Is it also wildly coincidental that he just happens to walk in or walk near the door where they're having the conversation at the end of the episode?
I think he's looking for her. Wait, no, he's always walking because he's at the castle.
Yeah. And of course, it's meant to mirror the same thing that happened,
yes.
You know, with
Charlotte
with overhearing. Charlotte with Princess, I mean, sorry, with the King and Princess Augusta. It's meant to mirror that, yeah. Right? You know, Charlotte chooses to do what she chooses to do, right? And then George now chooses to do what he chooses to do, all in the name of, I would imagine, love, so that he won't have those, you know, fits anymore, right? So, you got anything else that you want to talk about in this episode, my darling?
I don't. I'm excited for the next one.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like this is the one and done of the George-centric things.
I would agree.
We've got a lot of other things to be catching up on.
I would agree. There's a lot.
But now that we have this insight. And part of me thinks, too, like, maybe we're supposed to take in this, that maybe he talks with Charlotte about some of it. Maybe he opens up and tells her what we've now seen.
Yeah, he's going to have to.
I do these treatments or, you know, these things happen to me. So, I don't know. They'll just think that it's to help catch us up.
All right, you ready to close it out?
I am.
Let's do it.
So incredibly much for tuning into this podcast. As you can obviously tell, Blake and I are thoroughly enjoying this show, and we're just so appreciative that you do as well and that you're tuning into our podcast. Thank you.
Yes. So everybody, please, if you found value in this episode, that we have helped improve your viewing of Queen Charlotte and given you some other context or knowledge or ideas that you may not have thought of originally when you're watching it, please do provide a written review and a rating on Apple Podcasts, as that does help people discover the show. Not necessarily that it makes it more popular, but it just helps give people trust that that you all like it and that you enjoy listening to Mary and Blake. And of course, we do want you to also go to maryandblake.com to check out all the other podcasts and blogs that we have going on at Mary and Blake Media. As of this moment, Outlander Cast will be coming back later in about 2 weeks. It's coming back.
That's right.
In about 2 weeks.
Now, friends, if you do have the ability to head on over to Apple Podcasts and search for our podcast there, even if you listen to us on a different app, most people find us on Apple Podcasts. So you can head on over, search Bridgerton with Mary and Blake, and leave us a written review. Not just the stars, but a written review that would be greatly appreciated.
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
My brain's elsewhere. As you guys know, I just took a little break and we had a missing child. We had a missing child for like a solid 6 minutes.
A missing child?
Yeah. My grandparents are watching them. They were missing our son. They could not find him.
Really?
So I'm sorry my brain's not here. I found him. Sorry I wasn't listening at all.
That's okay.
I'm here. Really, we would love your reviews.
We want to tell you about it twice.
Okay, that is my cue.
It's time to go, Marvin.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us.
My name's Mary.
Hey, do me a favor. And just do a rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
If you feel pity for me, you're my brain.
My name's Just Blake.
I'm Mary. Go out there and brew some tea.
Don't lose your kid.
I didn't lose him. Grandparents did. He's fine. He's 10. He was upstairs. Hiding. He's fine.
He's fine.
God.
Maybe he was given a written review and a rating for his own podcast.
Our dog was attacking Grammy. It was so bad. It was messy. Okay, I'm shaking up. I'm shaking. I need an ice bath. All right, friends. On that note,
all right.
Go brew some tea.
Bye, everybody.